Welcome to the Fan Pregame Tuesday Night Edition. A day off between the NBA Finals and the Stanley Cup Playoffs, or Final, which means all eyes on the Blue Jays, baby. We're going to chat with Devin Dubnyk first, though, former Oiler and NHL Network analyst, in a little bit.
Yeah, those Blue Jays dropped the first in Milwaukee last night. Just four hits for your Toronto Blue Jays. Yusei Kikuchi versus Carlos Rodriguez tonight for Milwaukee. Two-time Minor League Pitcher of the Year in the Brewers system.
Oh, he's getting his debut?
MLB debut. Uh-oh. Dan Shulman in about 40 minutes to tee that one up.
We're going to chat best bets and stay tuned for a giveaway from Rogers where you could win a chance to go to the Game 4 Stanley Cup Final in Edmonton with some other exciting additions.
And yeah, exciting, because we have a radio-only half hour at 7 p.m. PWHL draft recap. You'll have winners and losers. I'll pitch you on who to cheer for at Euro 2024, because Bulgaria, of course, they didn't make it through qualification. We'll also touch on Leon Draisaitl avoiding suspension for the stiff elbow to the jaw of Alexander Barkov last night.
He just gently fell into him.
Yeah, it wasn't all that gentle.
That was a bit of a physical game, though.
It was.
I think things are ramping up. Of course, we're going to talk a little bit later with Devin Dubnyk. He's going to give us a little bit more of a goaltending perspective on it. Bobrovsky still leading the way here in terms of Conn Smythe voting. But we'll wait for Devin to give us that perspective. One thing that is interesting is we're at this travel day for everybody. People headed to Edmonton, headed to Dallas. And both series are tied up at, or are both 2-0 leads. Both series in the same spot. So it's not a traditional easy route back, being down 0-2, whether you're in the NBA or NHL. But if you had to pick an argument for one team that has a better shot at actually making this a series or coming back and winning it, we're going to kind of decipher the odds, I guess, for all of them.
Okay, I'll answer the question before we like unpack it too much. I will say the Oilers, just because it's a less of a true outcome sport. Like, that's the boring answer for me. I think in both these series, we have clearly defined better teams. Yeah. Right, it looks like Florida is the better team, but what's that worth? I guess we're going to find out. And it looks like the Boston Celtics are the better team. And if you do like the best team in the NBA versus the worst versus the best team in the NHL versus the worst, I think the NBA team wins more often than not, just because, yeah, you're trading hundreds of possessions over the course of, what, 10 simulated games. And generally, the better team is going to win out with the NHL. There's a lot of variance. Stuart Skinner could just be spectacular. Bobrovsky could turn into something way less than that. And, you know, maybe some injuries will play into that. So I will say the Oilers. However, when looking at both series, to me, it's going to take something special to come back.
Okay, so let me give you the historical context. Stanley Cup first. We'll work with the NHL as we both feel more confident, myself as well, that the Oilers have a better chance to come back from 0-2 than the Dallas Mavericks. So in the Stanley Cup, teams that have won the two games of the final first on have gone on to win the Cup by an all-time record of 49-5. So getting a 2-0 lead in the finals means a lot in the NHL. The last team to come back from an 0-2 deficit were the 2011 Boston Bruins.
Okay.
We know that team well. So if you just want to become the Boston Bruins of 2011, you could be the Edmonton Oilers of this year, and you could come back from 0-2. In the NBA finals, there's been 36 instances of a team trailing 0-2, and 31 times have they come back to win. So as I said, it's not likely, but those teams were the Bucks, and 2021 was the last one of that, which I kind of forgot that that even happened.
Well, that kind of goes against what I just said just a little bit. And now it doesn't mean that all these series, the better team was up 2-0. I mean, you could play like the Oilers did in game one and sort of not get the results as they did. But yeah, a stronger history of teams that are down 2-0, not being able to come back in the NHL, with both, you know, five instances on both sides, just fewer occasions in the NBA finals. So that is interesting and maybe goes against my argument a little bit.
Okay, so let's do the case for the Oilers to come back, because that to me is obviously the more exciting outcome, even to come back to just make this series within reach. Obviously, I want to see more hockey. And I have been outwardly said that I'm cheering for the Oilers on this one. So my main argument that the Oilers can come back and at least make this a series is that this is what they've done all season long. They have been the team that is about fortitude, about resilience, learning from your mistakes. And there's been a lot of mistakes in game one and two. Game one felt like I really missed opportunity, didn't capitalize on a Panthers team that didn't play. And then yesterday there were more mental mistakes. And of course, they're down 0-2 in this series. But I am going to choose to believe that the Oilers this season meant something, you know, firing your coach, being 2-9 and whatever it was to start the season and learning about yourself. Can you do that in a smaller sample size with a bit of a tighter turnaround in a series where you're down 0-2? I think the Oilers have something learned from this season that could show in the next two games.
Yeah, I think the thing that maybe would give me the most hope for the Oilers is that the Florida Panthers, although that was a defensive masterclass last night and something that maybe they win with every single time they prevent or they present that exact same effort, the Florida Panthers do choose thin margins, right? They're not trying to blow you out. They're not trying to score 5, 6, 7 goals. They're not taking chances. They are making sure they're, you know, checking off priority one first, which is just to play sound defensively. And the Oilers are the team, if any team, to break down sound defensive structure, right? With all the unbelievable talent that they have at the top of their roster. If Connor McDavid has a couple moments, well, those couple moments may just be enough against a team that is not forcing the issue themselves offensively. That is not, you know, the unders are hitting in all these games. They're relying on 1-2 goals, Sergei Bobrovsky allowing every single night. They're not scoring all that much at all. So if McDavid and Draisaitl, Hyman, Nugent Hopkins, the power play gets going, Bouchard, if they have a couple moments, that could be enough against a team that chooses to play the way they do. And again, this is the right way for Florida. This might be the only way to win now in the NHL. But if they are choosing that route where they are okay scoring 3 or less, well, against the Oilers, on every so often, occasionally at the very least, they're going to be able to score 4 or 5, and that would be, of course, enough to win the game.
Okay, another reason I'm believing in the Oilers to at least make this a closer series is what Connor McDavid had to say after last night's game. We got the audio clip, but I'll tee it up for you. Obviously being asked about, you know, going home 0-2, which I will say I think is a positive for them being able to have two home ice advantage games here. I liked his response, and I actually believe in his mentality and his leadership abilities to make this not just empty words. So this is what Connor McDavid had to say after last night's game.
It's another opportunity for our group to come together and dig our way out. It's supposed to be hard. It's supposed to be difficult. And I'm excited to see what our group's made of. I'm excited to see our group come together. I'm excited to see us fight through adversity, and looking forward to people doubting us again. You know, we're good with their backs against the wall.
That like leads in mainly to my belief in this is like we're excited to see people doubt us. We're good with our backs up against the wall. We've been here before, and we've found a way. That's what I'm holding on hope for, is that those things resonate in that locker room. Connor McDavid's a respected leader. He's the guy that's going to put this team on his back to make it happen. And if you're calm, cool, and collected and pretty upfront about it after that game, I think that that team really rallies around that mentality.
Yeah, I guess my question would be, can they rally? I think one of the most alarming things that we saw last night, and this was, again, because of the state of the game in a lot of ways, but I did see what looked like a gassed and taxed group with the Edmonton Oilers. They didn't look like this until just last night, where, yeah, you had to put out Edmonton's top guys over and over and over again as you were chasing in the third period. But, like, Evander Kane not looking right, clearly. Darnell Nurse taking only a handful of shifts. The Oilers reduced to 5 defensemen.
Maybe it's best that those two don't get too much ice time.
Yes and no. I mean, I think some of their struggles probably have something to do with being beaten up in the way that they are. I mean, peak Evander Kane is an asset. Peak Darnell Nurse maybe isn't $9.25 million on his best day, but still someone you want to play over Cody Ceci, Vincent Desharnais, Broberg, etc. going down the line. Like, he has to be good. He has to play at the very least, or you are less than your best. And it feels like a little bit of last year that we saw through Florida, where they got to the end and they just had nothing to muster. Mm. And at the end of last night's game, it looked to me like one team was like totally fresh. One team had all the strength and vitality of a Stanley Cup winner, and the other one looked like it was on the limp a little bit. And that can change, right? We talked about, hey, what is the travel? Who does the travel benefit? I think it's pretty clear the travel can benefit the Oilers more than Florida, because they looked like a team that needed a couple nights off.
Okay, I think speaking of injuries, if Barkov is injured or laboring out there, dealing with something, that is a huge, huge plus for the Edmonton Oilers, obviously. Not, you know, in the way it happened. Not going to say that was a plus, but Barkov is the best player for the Florida Panthers. And Tkachuk being kind of not really a factor so far in the series in terms of even like offensive skill set at this point. He's been, you know, mucking it up a bit, but it hasn't been the Tkachuk series. Barkov is the guy that's supposed to go head to head with the best on Edmonton Oilers. And if he's injured, like, that's a big time opportunity for the Oilers to at least capitalize, even if it's just one game. And so everything is a one game sample size at this point. Barkov's injury could be something for the Oilers to rally around, Tkachuk being quiet as well. And their leading scorer is Erod.
Which, again, it's not designed to be that way.
Right.
But they can get away with it because they're not scoring all that many
goals. These are just reasons why Oilers fans should feel better.
And I think the strongest one is the Barkov one.
Yeah.
If Barkov's not available, if Barkov does not play again this season, and again, it sounded pretty optimistic on the side of the Panthers, I mean, that is a huge deal. This is the first layer of many layers that Connor McDavid has to go through in order to get to the front of the net, which he didn't really do at all in last night's game because they were so good defensively. Barkov is maybe the most important player for that team aside from Sergei Bobrovsky. You can make arguments for other ones, but you cannot tell me that they won't feel his absence if he is absent. I don't know how much it's worth because their success, Florida's, does not hinge exclusively on one player in the same way that it does with the Oilers. I know Leon Draisaitl's there, but if you lose McDavid, it's much more catastrophic than losing Alexander Barkov, despite how they line up, their importance to the team, and everything that goes through them. I mean, you just talked about the leadership with McDavid. The same applies to Barkov, but the Oilers are not the Oilers without Connor McDavid. And I think the Panthers can be the Panthers without Barkov for a short period of time.
Okay, let's keep it moving. Let's do a case for the Panthers. So if you think the Panthers have looked like the better team.
Last night was the case.
Well, there you go. They have looked like the better team. They are the better team. Bobrovsky is the better goaltender than Stuart Skinner, and that itself could be just like the title of the rest of this series. If Bobrovsky can play, maybe not as good as he was game one, but good enough to keep the Oilers from getting any advantages, that's something that probably isn't going to change the series in terms of having the better goaltender, and Bobrovsky has been that.
Yeah, and what they do in front of Bobrovsky is probably the strongest thing for me. I think that was an A-plus game from the Florida Panthers last night. I think that was probably, if not their best, very close to it. And I don't think anybody is beating that. Like, the best player, maybe the most talented player in the history of hockey is Connor McDavid. He didn't get to the slot once. Like, he was kept exclusively
except
at
on the breakaway.
Perimeter. He did have that one breakaway. And I don't know if he got a shot off, but, you know, real damning stats. Like, not a single high-danger look at 5-on-5 through the Oilers the entire game. I don't think I've ever seen Aaron Ekblad play as well as he did last night. They were just so, so good. It was an absolute A++ effort from them. And I think you could throw Edmonton's A, and it's not going to beat that. I think any team, really, across the NHL, their best doesn't beat that because it was almost impenetrable, except for that breakaway for McDavid. So if they can do that two more times out of five at most, like, they're going to win the Stanley Cup.
Last one for me on a Panthers positive, like, why they will continue this dominance is I saw a quote from Matthew Tkachuk online. It was asked about the Draisaitl elbowing, and he said he had no comment on it. Mm-hmm. And I just know that guy is going to be shot out of a cannon in game three. Maybe that sparks something that was missing. Maybe there's a little bit of a physical grittiness that the Panthers bring in response to Draisaitl. And if you awake a beast that is Matthew Tkachuk and co, then that's a scary recipe. And a part of me thinks that he's been too quiet. He's lurking in the shadows. So I would say the Panthers have still a lot to give, and that could be something worrisome nonetheless. Okay, so those are our pros and cons.
Yeah, I mean, I guess just to counter, like, I think that could be a con in some ways because they're so within themselves. And if they start to go outside themselves in any way, maybe it bites them because, yeah, it might give the Oilers the power play that provides the breakthrough that they haven't been able to get so far through six periods in the series.
I remember when Marchand kind of got out of over his skis in a couple games against the Leafs. That was like, oh, Matt, we're in Marchand's head. And then we know what happened there. Okay, let's flip to the NBA series. Obviously, another 2-0 lead there for the Celtics. This one was harder. I'm the optimist. This one was harder for me to find positives for the Mavericks to come back. But I'm going to give them to you anyway. Porzingis' injury.
I mean, if you needed one reason, you got a lifeline today with the Porzingis injury.
The most legitimate reason that Mavericks fans could be like, okay. Now, I'm going to do my best to read this. You're the guy that did Kin, though. You should be reading it. A torn, now, you know what? Justin, let's make you do it. You studied this in college.
All right. I'll give it a try. Torn medial retinaculum, allowing dislocation of the posterior tibialis tendon.
Yeah.
I believe in his left leg. I know a couple of those
retinaculum.
Words.
Retinaculum. I thought was your eye.
I just said that as fast as possible. Yeah, it's pretty.
It's a very rare injury.
I think it's just a muscle that is connecting the foot to the lower leg. That's
nonetheless.
Basically, we would just put it that way.
He's day to day. It's a rare injury. It's got a lot of letters and vowels and consonants in it. Nonetheless, Kristaps Porzingis, obviously, game one was like unbelievable. He's been an X factor. If he can't play, Mavs fans, maybe we're feeling good.
Yeah, there is an Al Horford lurking as a backup big, and there's others who can step up. I mean, this is they are made to withstand a Kristaps Porzingis injury. They are made to withstand almost any injury. Maybe not Jason Tatum, maybe not Jaylen Brown, but they are definitely able to withstand injuries. Porzingis was electric in game one.
It was awesome.
And he was certainly a big part of that victory. But they just have layers, and I think they're going to be able to deal with it, even if it opens up. One of the strengths of the Mavericks is, you know, the dunker position, having a couple bigs who can finish for Luka Doncic if he gets into that playmaking mode. Yeah, the best rim protector is Kristaps Porzingis for the Celtics, but it's going to take a lot more than just unlocking that bit of the game in order to solve the Celtics, who have just done such a great job adding ice bag after ice bag to the body of Luka Doncic by just making him work. That's been the key to the series, and the Porzingis injury doesn't really affect that.
Here are some more positives. They're getting home court advantage for the next two games.
Yep, that's a big one.
Game two was closer than game one.
It was.
Score-wise. And Luka still got a triple-double when he had a body cast on during the anthem, basically. So those are my three serious positives, including the Porzingis injury.
Yeah, I think they're all fair. Like,
there's a reason.
If Kyrie Irving just shoots the ball better, it's 1-1 right now, right? I mean, there was definitely the opportunity to win game two if you're the Mavericks. But I guess like these series almost reflect each other perfectly because there was the game that was there for the taking
for both teams
on outside of your own building. And it was squandered in both cases. And it's probably going to bite each team because this is what Boston does. Boston has clunkers. You know, they only lost twice this entire playoff because they still find a way to win the clunkers, the bad shooting nights, because they're so good in other ways. They are just so good defensively. And when you're a one-note team, at least without Kyrie Irving playing well, the Mavericks are fairly one-note. Like, they just have the answer for that. They have too many good defensive players, and they have too much attention to detail defensively to allow a one-note offense to beat them.
Okay, quickly, because we're going to take a break, we're going to get both our guests, Devin Dubnyk and Dan Shulman, in the second half of the show. Historically, all teams that were 14-2 in the NBA playoffs have they've all won the
makes a lot of sense.
NBA championship title.
Don't lose four times before you.
Yeah.
I mean, I get started
for and currently that's what we're on path for. But yeah, I think the Celtics need it more too. I think that that's a huge thing for the Celtics. This is like massive, massive moment, legacy stakes. We went into it a couple times and this week and last week setting it up. And I think that that bodes way more in the Celtics' favor, just like making this happen and quickly.
Yeah. For a team with a whole lot of baggage, this is unbelievably comfortable, right? Mm. Like if it was Denver on the other side and the greatest player in the world, Doncic is very good, but Denver is a little deeper and it'd be a better final. Like, maybe they'd be here in the footsteps, but it is a pretty simple task and the baggage doesn't even apply because it seems like it's a pretty simple task for them.
All right. It can still happen. This isn't has it ever been done before. As we said, 31-5 in NBA finals to come back, teams that have been able to find a way only not much. And then 49-5, the teams in the Stanley Cup final have gone on to continue to win. So it's been done. We'll take a quick break. We're going to talk to Devin Dubnyk, and we're going to talk to Dan Shulman ahead of tonight's game. Blue Jays on the road, of course, to play Milwaukee. Kikuchi on the mound. We'll tee that all up with Dan Shulman. We also have a new leadoff hitter for the Toronto Blue Jays. Mm. And Devin Dubnyk.
Same problems persist.
Yeah, maybe it's new. We'll try. I'm positive tonight. We're gonna find a way to spin this one. Nobody gets their bat stuck in the netting as well tonight. We'll take a quick break. We'll be back with all that and more on the Fan Pregame.
The best Blue Jays show out there, period. Blair and Barker. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back on the Fan pregame. Sportsnet 590, the Fan. No NHL or NBA action tonight. Everybody's traveling all across the world, really, to get to these new locations. We're going to bring in Devin Dubnyk in a little bit here as he gets settled. I believe he's probably still on the tarmac. We appreciate that. I had a quick thought on if you want to bet this series, but you don't really know who's going to win. But you don't, you know, it's going to be more than four games, right? You don't think it's going to be a sweep. So that would be the Florida Panthers.
Okay, so you're saying it's a guarantee that the Oilers get
win
at least
one, game.
One in Edmonton.
You can.
I'm not so sure about that.
I think they will.
Okay.
I hope they will.
I hope so too.
If you think
I don't want Shania Twain performing to a
right.
sad crowd. We need a game.
Well,
three
she's performing before the game, so.
I know, but if it's 3-0.
True. My best bets, and we're going to put them up on the screen quickly, the Stanley Cup to be awarded in five games. So that means Oilers get one, is plus 235. And you can ladder that and try six games if you feel like it, plus 265, and even seven games. And at that point, then, you know, there's you might as well just be picking Oilers.
Okay, so you're well, I'm which one do you like? You can't like all of these.
I'm just giving them to our listeners that are undecided.
In best
and
bets,
who's gonna
we
win.
Give out best.
My
best
favorite bets. Would be six games.
Okay.
And plus 265.
We're going head-to-head then, because my best bet right now after what we saw last night is that the series total will go under 5.5
wow.
at minus 110.
I
just feel like it's set up here. Like for this not to win or for this not to be in a position to be to gain value, the Oilers have to win both these games. And honestly, I think that's a really, really tall task after what we saw last night. Like it seems like Florida, to me, I think Florida's getting at least one of these and will have the opportunity to win five at home. And they're going to be heavy, heavy favorites in that game. So grabbing this is basically just a bet on Florida winning a game in Edmonton and being able to take it home with the opportunity to win with the cup in the building at on home ice. Like,
yeah, that's a really great story.
Just feels the most likely at this point.
If Barkov is injured, how does that affect my Conn Smythe betting, Justin? Where I've heavily invested in Barkov, thanks to you.
I don't even know if it matters at this point.
Really?
Because
they win the next two games, they still don't give it to Bobrovsky.
The hay in the barn. You need a bad Bobrovsky game at this point, I think. Which again is we're running out of time for that to happen. He's given up two or less in how many games in a row? He was the reason, the sole reason, exclusive reason they won game one, and he only gives up one in game two. He's definitely putting up the numbers for a team that shares the wealth offensively. And doesn't produce all that much offensively to start.
Mm-hmm.
So I definitely feel like Bobrovsky has a massive lead. But if there's a stinker in there, it goes back to Barkov. I just don't know if there's going to be a stinker because team is doing everything in its power to give Bobrovsky the chance to make the saves that he normally makes. And if that is the task for him, it seems like it's a wrap to me.
All right. Well, from one goaltending discussion to a former one. Devin Dubnyk joins us. Devin, we appreciate you jumping on. I know you're en route, planes, trains, automobiles, but thanks for coming on. How's it going?
Yeah, no problem. I'm going up an escalator in the airport right now. So,
all right,
we'll make
so
it work.
How is this travel going to affect the broadcasters that are going all over the continent to cover this Stanley Cup playoff?
Yeah, not bad for me, actually. I'm just doing one and two, and then supposed to do five and seven, but once Edmonton made it, we switched to six if they're going to get there, just so that I could get back to Edmonton because I thought that'd be kind of cool.
There you go. So not as bad as most have it, but still a lot of travel nonetheless. Okay, so we were talking about Sergei Bobrovsky.
Hey, listen, the people coming from Florida, they're in tough.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't even want to count how many planes it's going to require.
It's a lot.
But we have hockey until potentially late June because of it. So we will digress. Okay, so playoff Bobrovsky. We've seen it in full force here. But, you know, clearly he's doing his job for the Florida Panthers, and he was absolutely out of his mind in game one. But I'm watching game two thinking it's easy to be Sergei Bobrovsky right now, because that is as good of a defensive game as you can muster, I think, in the NHL these days, the way Florida defended the Oilers last night. Is the job simpler for Bobrovsky, than most goaltenders? And how does that affect, what Bobrovsky can do at this level? Because he's had his doubters, he's had his skeptics, but with this Panthers team, it looks like he's found the perfect match.
I wouldn't go as far as saying it's easy for him by any means. I mean, he's still, even watching the game, they certainly did an incredible job last game of limiting chances compared to game one. But then that's the thing about Bobrovsky, is that he's, you know, if you do have an off game a little bit like game one, I think Paul Maurice made a good point of them getting back to their game in the third period of game one and having that kind of trickle over into game two. But you do have a guy that is going to make just about every save you'd expect him to make, plus, plus, plus. And, it's going to be difficult for the Oilers, as we've seen, to get through that. And they're going to have to find some different ways, I think, to... After game one, I don't think they needed to change anything. I mean, we talked a lot about execution on scoring chances and all that stuff, but if they had stuck to that game, we know with their skill and their offensive ability that they would have got through. But I also said that they were going to see a different Florida Panthers team in game two, which they absolutely did, because that's the Florida Panthers right there that we saw in game two. And they're just not going to give... They're not going to give a lot. They play hard. They play aggressive, both 5-on-5 and penalty killing. And we saw that, every bit of that in game two.
Yeah, I wonder for you, when you're trying to size up the tall task at hand that the Edmonton Oilers have moving forward, how much Barkov's potential absence or potential injury would loom over the opportunity at hand? You mentioned the defensive shutdown. You mentioned how important that player is for the Florida Panthers. If he's not able to play, and let's just say game three, like, how much of a door does that open for the Edmonton Oilers to be able to create more high danger looks, to be able to open up their superstars, to allow for more than zero high danger chances at 5-on-5 in game two? What could that do potentially for the Edmonton Oilers?
Well, I mean, it's huge, and it's a hard thing to talk about, because mm-hmm. you're talking about one of the best players in the world, and when we watch the Stanley Cup final or playoffs in general, we want to see the best players on the ice and the best players playing, so you never want to have a guy like that off the ice. We want to be watching him do what he does best and what he's done best for the first two games, but certainly an opportunity for Edmonton, if he is out, to take advantage. I mean, that line has done such a good job of just limiting guys of chances that we didn't think were able to be limited. I mean, really, it's been a strange couple games. I can't even say that. It's the first game they got their chances. Last game was a strange game. Watching them be able to limit these guys for grade A chances that we just haven't seen this team be limited in that way in a very long time. So if Barkov's not there, I mean, he's a very, very pivotal part of that team. So Edmonton's going to have to do their best to take advantage of that if he is out, and take advantage of being at home. I mean, anybody that's been, I was fortunate enough to be in Edmonton in 2006 when they went to the Cup final as a Black Ace. I just signed my first contract there, and we're not talking about a rink. We're talking about an entire city that's ready to explode, and it can be overwhelming if they can get momentum and get going early on. It can absolutely be overwhelming, and they can use that to their advantage.
So one of the storylines coming in this series was these teams seem relatively healthy. Like, clearly Evander Kane was going through something, and maybe Darnell Nurse, and there was some talk of Leon Draisaitl, but it seemed like, hey, these two teams are going to be able to go at it. Lots of space between games. They're coming in relatively healthy. But then it kind of changed last night, or at least it seemed to change. Darnell Nurse barely could play. Evander Kane the same. Leon Draisaitl also left for a very, very short period of time. Did the attritive aspect of the Stanley Cup playoffs hit the Oilers last night for you? Or was that a case of, hey, we're chasing a game and we got to basically play McDavid and the top guys every other shift, and there's going to be some huffing and puffing when that's the reality of a third period?
Yeah, I think it's just this is what you tend to see as the playoffs go on, especially playing against a team like Florida. I mean, it is such a long, hard grind for these guys. And Florida, to me, is it's crazy that, you know, watching them throughout the playoffs, you know, you always look at game one of the first series and the first half of the first period is everybody comes out and everybody's hitting everything that moves. And it's just the intensity is through the roof. And you watch Florida throughout the playoffs and it's like they do this every game. It's like they're still doing it. So, I mean, I'm surprised that there's just some stuff coming up for them right now, but it's just guys are probably playing through injuries. Not probably, they're for sure playing through injuries that we don't know about already. And then when you have a team like Florida that just, they're relentless with the way they hit on every single play, you know, stuff can flare up. And it's just, it's kind of the way the game goes. It's been like that for a long time. And you know, like I mentioned, we don't want to see it. We want to see the best players on the ice. But this is also why usually the teams that win the Stanley Cup are the teams with the most depth, the guys they pick up at the deadline. You look at like an Okposo in Florida and guys that, you know, if something happens, they're able to step in, and they're not just random players that are coming in to take ice time and fill a role. These are really good hockey players. And those are the teams that you see that go far, because there's just, I don't think there's any way around it with how long and how hard of a grind the Stanley Cup playoffs are to get to the final and win it.
Where are you at with Stuart Skinner's, I guess, playoffs in general, how he's been able to kind of step out of that net, have Calvin Pickard take over, the fortitude and I guess the mental toughness it would have had to have for Stuart Skinner to get back in there and to perform, and the current level he's at in game one and two against the Florida Panthers, and if there's more that he needs to do to get this Oilers team a Stanley Cup?
That's a tough one. I don't think there's more he needs to do necessarily. I think you always just have to look at the goals. And I think he's actually been extremely sharp in the first two games. I think that he really turned it on at the end of the Dallas series as well. And these are things, he's a young goalie. I mean, we forget he's not, you know, these are things that goalies, they need to go through. You need to experience this stuff. And I think he's done a really good job using his experience from last year into the adversity that he's faced this year. And he's really started to elevate his game toward, you know, last half of the Dallas series. And I think he's played great in the first two games. You know, it's funny. And I guess that's what the Stanley Cup finals will do. But I got asked the question after the first game, does Stuart Skinner need to give more? And, you know, it's almost laughable a little bit, because what else is he supposed to do? I mean, look at the two goals. He didn't get a lot of shots, but that's not up to him how many shots he gets. He can only stop the ones that come at him, and I thought he was sharp. I thought he was sharp the whole game, and you know, the two goals that went in weren't bad goals by any means. They were good hockey plays and breakdowns by the Oilers. And you look at the first goal in game one. I mean, that's a play that you don't want to give up for the first shot of the game. You know, he might stop that if he's seen 30 already in the third period, but when that's the first shot of the game, that's tough. And kind of same thing with last night. I mean, you look at the goals, and there's not, you got a cannon for Mikkola that's a bit of a dive bomb knuckleball right inside the post, and then, you know, a turnover and a shot from Rodriguez that goes off of the Edmonton player and right under the bar, and then a real nice tip from the corner. You know, and be sharp for the rest of the game. You have to look at that stuff, and you can't just look at the fact they've lost two games and however many goals he's let in and say, do we need more out of him? Mm-hmm. Every goalie wants to stop every single puck that comes their way. I think he's been sharp. I think more than anything, just eye test, I think he's been really good.
Last one for you here, Devin, and we'll get you through customs. What's paramount tomorrow for the Oilers? Like, what needs to happen for them to make this a series? I guess not tomorrow, in game three.
A couple things. Obviously, the power play. That is, you know, strange last night talking about the Oilers' power play and what they need to do better, because it's historically one of the best power plays ever. And I felt a little out of place trying to talk about what Dreisaitl, Nuge, and McDavid should do better. But I think, you know, Florida's doing such a good job there that Edmonton needs to create a little chaos. They need to take a few more shots, crash the net a little bit to begin with, and it's taking shots and creating retrievals and get Florida out of sync a little bit, because I think if you look at Florida when they're in position and they're in sync, they've got such good sticks, they're aggressive, they're good skaters, they're confident. You got to create some chaos there and get some retrievals, and then if you get Florida the Florida PK in a bit of a spin cycle, well, then you get the retrievals, and then you get McDavid skating around 100 miles an hour and Draisaitl finding its spots, and then we'll start to see the things that we're used to seeing on Edmonton, where they will find those seams. But you have to get them uncomfortable and kind of out of sorts to begin with, and I think that's taking a few more shots and crashing the net a little bit. And then Edmonton also has to get back to their speed through the neutral zone. I thought, especially in the second period last night, it was very noticeable. Just a lot of high flips, cross-ice dumps out of Edmonton, not a ton of speed through the neutral zone like we're used to seeing, no rush chances. And all those dumps, if you are going to be forced to dump against Florida, they're going to have to find a way to go get it and find a way to retrieve it. And I think those high flips, the soft dumps, the cross-ice dumps just weren't working last night. And it was very noticeable, especially in the second period. There were just three shots on net, and every time they seemed to come through the neutral zone, they were flipping it in, cross-ice dumping, and with no retrievals. And that's not going to work. They got to go back to the way they played in game one a little bit more.
Well, hopefully the series is long from over. Devin, we appreciate you jumping on, especially during a travel day, and enjoy the rest of the playoffs. Hopefully we can chat soon.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys.
Thanks so much. Devin Dubnyk, of course, of NHL Network, former NHL goaltender, quickly going to pivot into a great opportunity for our listeners. Rogers announced an exciting new national contest, Bring Stanley Home, to send Rogers customers and hockey fans from across Canada to the Stanley Cup Final in Edmonton. Rogers customers have the chance to win 10 VIP trips for two to attend Game 4 in Edmonton on Saturday, June 15th. This prize also includes travel and accommodation, plus premium viewing at a game day concert featuring Shania Twain outside Rogers Place. So visit rogers.com/Stanley Cup to enter for your chance to win. And for more details, that's going to be awesome. And hopefully Game 4 isn't an elimination game. All right. Dan Schulman, the TV voice of the Toronto Blue Jays for us here at Sports, has been patiently waiting. Dan, how's it going? Thanks for jumping on.
Great, guys. How you doing?
We're doing well. How's Green Bay Packers land? You just loading up on merch or what?
I actually did. So now I thought there would be a merch store right in downtown Milwaukee. But there wasn't, so I jumped in an Uber. I needed to stock up on some very, very important items. Well, I wore a little Packers pin on my lapel yesterday, but I think all of our bosses were watching the hockey game, so I don't think anybody saw. But now that I've talked about it on the radio, I guess they'll notice it tonight. But I went down. I'm a hoodie freak. I just can't. I love hoodies, and I found a really cool one. It looks like, you know what I mean when I say it looks like a hockey hoodie, like it's got the laces, you know what I mean? So, but I got a hoodie, and then maybe I shouldn't out Ben, but he wanted some stuff too. And so he got fuzzy dice and a keychain. So, you know, like really important stuff,
yes.
Like necessities is what we're talking about here.
I didn't know where Ailish was going there, but merch heads, no merch heads.
No, I love merch.
You guys are connecting on that merch level. Let's go to the Blue Jays, and more specifically, the leadoff spot. Why does this problem still persist, Dan?
Well, I mean, the one time, I guess, Spencer Horowitz was up there, he did okay, and he's in the lineup tonight, but it's a great question. I looked at some numbers today, and if you look at Davis Schneider down in the order versus Davis Schneider leadoff, no comparison, much better down in the order. Dalton Varsho, not a leadoff guy, so I know what you asked, but like Dalton Varsho hitting five and below versus Dalton Varsho hitting two, way different. Danny Jansen hitting fifth versus Danny Jansen hitting second, way different. I feel for John Schneider because it's not like he's doing nothing. I mean, I think he's one step away from picking the names out of a hat, because no matter who he tries up at the top of the order, it's just not working. And you know, the whole idea of an order is put guys at the top who get on base a lot so the guys in the middle can drive them in, and it's just not working. So maybe Horowitz is the solution. That's a lot to ask of a guy who's just come up from AAA, but he's leading off tonight. And, you know, if he gets on base a couple of times, I think he'll be leading off tomorrow. But it's not just leadoff. It's the two spot as well. They've got to get more offense out of that. And listen, this is it's got to get better 1 through 9, right? It's up and down the lineup. They're still just not scoring enough runs consistently.
Maybe you can give him the cheese head and he can pick the names out of the, you know, that hat instead of a
or
hat.
Roll the fuzzy dice.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Okay, what can he do to get Bo Bichette?
Write them off as a business. There,
I think we're on to something, Dan. All right, what needs to be done to get Bo Bichette producing more?
Boy, that's a great question, because he had like that 2-week run where he looked like the Bo of old. And I've said on the air and I was like on TV, and I'll say it now, and I've said it, you know, just to people who I'm talking to, everything that has happened with this team this year, and it's a long, long list. The one that surprises me the most is what's going on with Bo, because all he has done since he's gotten to the big leagues is hit. And I don't know what it is. You know, is he chasing a little bit more, swinging a little? Like, Bo is always an aggressive guy. He'll always swing at pitches nobody else will swing at, but he'll hit them more than anybody else will, the ones out of the strike zone. I don't know what it is, guys, honestly. I mean, if they knew what it was, they would fix it. I kind of thought today that he'd be up in the two spot, to be honest with you. I kind of had a feeling David Schneider wouldn't play. He hasn't been hitting the last several days. And I thought they might go Horwitz, Bo, Vladdy and see if that works. But Bo is still hitting cleanup. But Ailish, I wish I knew what it was, because that's a game changer. You know, Vladdy hitting at his best is a game changer. Bo hitting at his best is a game changer. And other guys need to do more. Turner and Springer and Kirk and all the guys we talk about. But it all starts with Vladdy and Bo.
So the Blue Jays make the decision on Kevin Biggio over the weekend. And I don't know if they're – well, I'll ask you. Can we read into this more than just the decision on Kevin Biggio and reaching the end of the line on Kevin Biggio? Or does this signal anything else for you in terms of where the direction might be going when it comes to personnel and roster decisions here moving forward?
I think it's more in the moment and immediate rather than down the road, to be honest with you. I think they still hope and believe that Daniel Vogelbach is going to give them power, is going to be a factor against right-handed pitching. He's not in there tonight. He was in there last night. It's kind of hit and miss whether he's in there. He had that 3-4 game stretch where he hit well, and then they played him a little bit more, and he hasn't been able to continue that. I don't know if it's much more, honestly, like I don't know, but I don't know if it's much more complicated than they know they need power badly and they think he can provide it. I know they also think he's a big voice in the room, and that's great. And I am never one to advocate for, you know, somebody losing a job. It surprised me about Biggio. Like, it didn't knock me backwards with shock, but it surprised me a little bit. But I guess maybe they think it's run its course. And, you know, if Horwitz is a left-handed bat and Horwitz is going to play a lot of second base, and maybe they thought there was a redundancy there too. But I feel for him. And we should be hearing hopefully in the next 24 to 48 hours that he's landed with another team. Like, the clock is ticking on a trade or waivers or something like that. And I hope wherever he goes, it's a good spot for him. So, he's not a star, but I think he's a major league player, and I think he can help teams.
Yeah, he was a good part of this franchise for a while and came up with some of the Bane names on this roster. So I wonder how everyone was feeling about it. Not great, probably, for the locker room for a little bit there. Dan, I know we got to let you go. I just want to ask you about tonight's starter, Carlos Rodriguez, 2-time minor league pitcher of the year, making his major league debut. That could be a recipe for some fun. I wonder what you know about the Brewers starter tonight.
So Pat Murphy, their manager, is a big, big, big fan. He's got 6 different pitches, and he says no single pitch of his is extraordinary, but it's his ability to throw any pitch at any time and any count to anybody that he likes, and that doesn't sound like a good recipe for the Blue Jays. So because they have made a few of these types of guys look pretty good this year. I will tell you this. Yes, it's his major league debut. He's only 22 years old. He pitched in the World Baseball Classic for Nicaragua against Puerto Rico, and a team in Puerto Rico that had 6 or 7 major leaguers in the lineup. That's obviously a big stage when you're from Nicaragua pitching against Puerto Rico, 35,000 in the stands, and it's the WBC. So I'm not like, I don't know if he's going to be nervous tonight, but having done that, I would think he'd be a little bit less nervous tonight, and we shall see. The Brewers have dug deep, deep, deep into their depth this year because they've had so many pitching injuries, and they're doing fine. They've got some pretty good depth. This guy didn't have good numbers at Triple A this year, but they were really, really bad in April and much, much better in May. So, you know, never having seen him pitch live, but just knowing how the Blue Jays are scuffling right now, I don't think there's any guarantee they're going to really get to this guy. Like, he looks like he's got a chance to be successful.
Well, hopefully there's something to keep us interested, like a bat stuck in mesh or something.
I know.
That was very fun last night. I'm sure it was a once-in-a-lifetime for you.
Maybe Kikuchi will tackle somebody else today. He's pitching. And
there
maybe,
you go.
Maybe Kikuchi will just truck somebody tonight.
Poor guy. He wanted to dig a hole and hide in it. He's the sweetest. All right, Dan, we'll let you go. Appreciate your time tonight. Have a great call, and we'll chat soon.
Go Pack, go. Thanks, guys.
Thanks. That's Dan Shulman, TV voice of the Toronto Blue Jays, with us here at Sportsnet. Yeah, it's an interesting matchup. We've got Kikuchi, who a couple days ago was... blindsiding people.
When something embarrassing happens, you want to like hide under the covers, but yeah. Like Kikuchi, all he does is sleep. So what? Like,
yeah.
What's his recourse?
He said he
there?
Wanted to dig a little hole and hide in it.
Oh, I thought that was yours.
No, that's what Kikuchi said.
Yeah. That was unbelievable.
So cute.
Like, it was one of the funniest things I've ever seen.
So you got Kikuchi versus Rodriguez tonight, and as Dan says, Rodriguez major league debut, but he's had a bit of a run in terms of playing in big moments. I mean, this is what scares Blue Jays, right? A guy coming up kind of last minute in a sense of like, okay, what do we know about him?
Sounded like a young Chris Bassett, throwing anything at any time.
Sounds like that.
But not one special pitch. So we'll see how the Blue Jays fare again. It seems like they're always running into this where there's, you know, you want someone that's, you know, might have those major league jitters. And yet guys who they don't have that book on, the khakis haven't unloaded on, it seems to flummox, I believe is the word we use with Chris Leroux.
I'm already looking at strikeout props for Rodriguez.
So we shall see. But let's focus on Kikuchi, our buddy Nick Ashbourne, with a nice note in one of his columns at sportsnet.ca since last June 11, so a year ago, fifth among MLB starters in Fangraphs WAR. This guy has had an unbelievable turnaround. Everyone, if we're going back 2 years, everyone wants him gone. And now you say Kikuchi, you know, he's turned things around in such a way where it's negligence if they don't move on from him this summer, as sad as that will be. And as long as the Blue Jays have these starters, like, they have the pitching that's going to keep them in this race, involved at least in the competition for the AL wild card. But if they pull one of those pins, like, what does it look like? What happens then? We might find out that sooner than later, or the schedule that's ahead might sort of dictate that a little bit more. But the strength of this pitching staff can still get them through and keep them, you know, treading water at the very least.
Yeah, the idea of bringing Horwitz in and maybe switching up this lineup a bit. I mean, Horwitz had two hits again last night. No Davis Schneider in the lineup tonight. Horwitz, Jansen, Guerrero, Bichette, Varsho, Turner, Springer, Kiner-Falefa, who's honestly... They're like relying on Isaiah Kiner-Falefa to be like a contributing member every day. And that's kind of where we're at. And like, not an offense on IKF, just the fact that this guy's been really good and they need him to be. Kevin Kiermaier and then Kikuchi on the mound, as we mentioned. It's at 8 o'clock on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. It's going to be an interesting amount of time over the stretch here. And this was a tweet from BNS that I think laid out kind of perfectly, like, the conundrum that, I guess, conundrum of where the Blue Jays are at. If the Blue Jays win or lose a lot, their deadline decision will be easy. Obviously, we know that. Yeah. We're in the mushy middle. If they stay right where they are, two games under 500 with 19.1% playoff odds, three back of a wild card, the decision becomes harder. But if they're three back of playoffs, I don't see them selling. So we're in, this is like Raptors vibes again, right? Where you're approaching the trade deadline, what do you do? And then they made ultimately maybe the wrong decision. You just hope that the Blue Jays, if they're 19% chance of playoff odds and they're starting to get closer and closer and they're over 500, maybe we find something. But it's kind of like Groundhog Day every day.
Yeah, and it can go both ways. Like, I guess we focus on the negative maybe a little bit too much, pulling one of those pitchers out. What does it mean? But it feels like if they keep winning ball games, or they win ball games, they stay in this race, that they're not that far away. If, like, you see some positive regression, Bo gets back to Bo, and guys can do a little bit more of what they were promised to do this year, like, one more addition makes them look like a playoff team. It's just, honestly, it's such a confusing spot, and you just hope you have direction, which, again, is unpromised.
All right, Jays Brewers, 8 o'clock here on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Sportsnet 1. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to have another 30 minutes on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. We're going to chat what's going on with Joey Chestnut. It's really important. PWHL draft recap, winners and losers, and the Euro 2024. You're going to sell me on a team, and I'm ready to commit. We'll be back.